Hey everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 395. Woo! Bloopity blippity.
Bloopity blippity.
It's a catchphrase this week.
I picked it up on the streets, Cannonsburg.
So, that's a good enough intro. I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics. Joining me tonight are...
Brandon.
Dave.
Pat.
Spencer.
Brandon can't sit there anymore. He doesn't know.
No, he's just panicked.
That's your cue, man.
He's in the key seat. Well, not the key seat. Mike was going to be here, but then he had work to do, so whatever. We see what his priorities are.
Not comic book.
Yeah. That's right.
God.
He doesn't care about you like we do. So remember that when submitting questions. Thank you. So I really was not paying any attention to any news. I don't know if there was anything.
Because the news is never good anymore.
Yeah, no. Watching too much real news to pay attention to the fun news. I know Dave's very upset that Inferior 5 got cut back from 12 to 6. Now, I'm not... I heard that on the Comics Conspiracy podcast, so I don't have first-hand knowledge of that.
But. Now it's only half as much fun.
Yeah.
When did that news break?
I heard it. They recorded yesterday, so it must have been yesterday at some time.
I'm so upset. I don't think I could go on.
Okay, fair enough. I'm sorry.
Now all you need is just an end chapter to that Dr. Scrooge story, and
you'll be good.
Set. I think that's next week, if I'm not...
You've been saying that for the past 3 months now.
Did you see the big Life and Times of Uncle Scrooge out there?
I did, yeah.
That's volume two. I have volume one coming back in next week.
All right.
Exactly, it's
good times.
Yes. I'm looking forward to talking about books, because there was one that I thought was wonderful.
We'll get there, Colin.
I know.
Calm
I'm
down.
Just writing them down, and I'm like, ooh!
The Into the Spider-Verse is getting a sequel.
Yep.
And the best part is they're using the Japanese Spider-Man.
The one with the big robot?
Yes.
When's that going to come out?
2022. Oh, yeah, 22.
Because animation takes forever, especially when it's...
Not really. South Park can put together an episode in a week.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
They're...
Special.
They're special, yeah.
They are.
The cast, Alfred and Penguin. It's Andy Serkis. And
Colin Farrell.
And then there's a rumor that Matthew McConaughey is going to be Harvey Dent.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't like Colin Farrell as the Penguin at all.
Yeah, that's weird.
I think it's a miscast.
Yeah.
He's a good actor, but he doesn't look like the Penguin. The Penguin is supposed to be just grotesque looking. Danny DeVito was a great Penguin. Worked perfect. Yeah. Burgess Meredith worked as the Penguin, too, but for a different reason.
I don't know. The Penguin on Gotham, or whatever that show was called, he was okay.
But he's very gangly looking.
Yeah.
So it just...
I could see them putting Colin Firth in, like, a fat suit. Or not Colin Firth.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell.
Completely different dude.
Yeah.
Don't ever talk to Samuel L. Jackson, because you're going to call him Lawrence Fishburne, and he's going to get pissed.
You're going to get real mad.
Colin Firth, the guy from Pride and Prejudice and Kingsman and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. They're at least putting, like... good actors, well-known actors.
That's kind of the problem. Like, it seems like they're putting so much money into the cast.
Yeah.
Eventually, it's like, are you going to make your money back?
But the thing is it based on Long Halloween? Is that what they're basing it off of?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a... Because, like, Long Halloween, it would kind of make sense, because you can just spend, like... cut the movie in 12 parts, and, like, you spend a little bit of time with each of them.
Yeah. They're just remaking the 66 Batman.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey is actually playing the Joker. They just didn't want us to know.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they were all running around together.
He's going to grow a mustache.
Raiding the United Nations.
See, I was worried about having that big of a cast in the first movie if they try to do... I mean, I don't know if they want to try to do sequels to it or not, but I like to try to keep that cast... together, you know, for a long period of time, I think would be kind of difficult. Especially just with, like, their track record of doing things.
If they do the Long Halloween, who would play Calendar Man?
Colin Firth.
Zooey Deschanel. She has range.
Well, I think we don't know. Like, if they do Mad Hatter, though, it has to be Dinklage, right? Peter Dinklage?
No. That's no? No, that's typecasting. Mm.
No, it needs to be the guy who played Hodor.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you just film him way in the background. Yeah. That'd
be good. I like that.
But if you look at, like, a lot of the Batman movies, though, they have a lot of characters from the comics. They're just not, like, well-known actors.
Yeah.
They're more... like, what's his place? What's his face? The who played Harvey Dent in the 89 Batman?
Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee Williams.
I was going to say Lando, and that I knew what was wrong. I was struggling.
Yeah, Billy Dee Williams.
Lando system.
Like, you know, he was in the movie, but you would, if you didn't know who Harvey Dent was, he would have been completely forgettable.
But that's true. That Well, and it was because they were setting up for if it did well, hey, we can do a sequel. We'll have Two-Face in it, and then they said, you know, who'd be a better Two-Face? Tommy Lee Jones. I'm not sure that's true.
They both have three names.
That's true. So there's Lee Harvey Oswald. I wouldn't make him a Batman villain.
Wasn't going
either.
There, but okay.
He probably even agrees with that.
He'd be like Deadshot or something.
John Wayne Gacy. He can play the Joker.
Yeah.
He already has a clown costume. I mean, yeah.
Are you going to go there?
Why would I not go there? And, you know, that's an easy target. Yeah. So I think that's it for the news.
Yeah.
So we had questions, didn't we, Colin?
Yeah, hang on a second.
We had a special appearance.
We had live questions, but let me go. There were a couple from last week that came late.
Oh,
that I
okay.
want to hit. So hang on.
Oh, they were late from last week.
There
so
we
a
go.
More
no, no. okay.
Halloween oriented.
Yeah, no, one was. Yeah, we did talk about top horror books. Favorite advertisements that were in comic books?
Hostess Pies.
Yeah.
Not Twix.
Good one. Good one.
Grit.
Grit. Yes.
Man, I remember the grit ads.
I remember all the video game ads.
Oh yeah.
Oh, see, I'm more the getting the locker of army men for $1.99.
Mm-hmm. Sea monkeys.
Or the awesome Jack Davis sports ads for Spalding. The billing for the baseball gloves were the different gloves for the different positions. And then the great Dr. J. Rick Barry one. Those were good ones. But that's because I'm old. Those are from the 70s.
Yeah.
There was a lot of good house ads, too. Marvel, in the Marvel books especially. In the 80s.
Okay, Mark asks, has a customer ever told you about a series they got from you that made a significant impact on their life? Honestly, no, I can't think of anybody. I mean, a lot of people, the boys, you know, but not in a good way.
sleep.
I have hand sold a ton of that book well before the TV show, back when it was coming out. That was always my favorite. I'm looking for something different.
Well,
I got just the thing for you.
Hello, different.
Yeah.
How do you feel about superheroes?
Yeah.
Wait till you read this.
Yeah. How do you feel like Gladiator?
How do you feel about hamsters?
Spencer had to go there.
It's okay. His initiation's later.
So, yeah, sadly, no, nothing really. So let me see. I know we have a couple more. Here we go. Lord Retail. Has there been an upswing in people trying to sell comics towards the end of the month or first of the next month? I think that is a potential barometer of economic health as people try to liquidate just to make ends meet. I've seen a real slowdown in people bringing stuff in, and most of the stuff I've been getting lately, I mean, every once in a while I get somebody bringing in, you know, just random stuff, but I think it's more, I'm never going to read this again. A guy just brought in some G.I. Joe trades, and I think he was just, I just need to get these out of the house. And it's mostly that.
I'm getting there. Actually, my wife is getting there.
My favorite are the boxes with the mover tags on them. And you can tell the people are moving. And they were told, you're not moving these again. So I do enjoy getting those in, only because I know I can, you know, make a lower offer because they don't, you know, they're just looking to get rid of them. But no, I can't say I've noticed. But yeah, yeah, it's really dry.
Take your mover tags off before you break.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, like with everything, there's a, you know, I'm making an offer based on, you know, guessing what I can sell them for, and you know, obviously, I want to pay the least amount. So that's that's always a little tell, though.
But that's like my my brother and his wife are like looking at houses, and they sent me a picture the other day at one of the places that they were looking at. And one of the rooms had, like, a big shelf full of boxes of comics and stuff. And I was like, oh, well, if I get to say, you know, if those come with the house, I say you pick that house. And they're like, yeah, we were joking about that. I was like, what you do is you just find, like, do they belong to the husband or the wife of the house? And then you go to the spouse and then ask how much.
Especially if it's the husband and the wife gets the offer. Well, they'll give us this much or this much if you leave the comics. Be like, hello.
You always go to the spouse for the get the cheaper price. Yeah.
Okay, here's one. What's the hesitation? This is from Samara. What's the hesitation to allowing Poison Ivy to evolve into an anti-corruption climate change fighting hero that occasionally partners with the Justice League, even if they don't always agree on methods, as if Batman is really all that squeaky clean in the method department? I kind of touched on that a little bit in Deceased, although granted that's a different world where she was, you know, the big protector.
And she kind of is, though.
Yeah.
Right, especially when they gave her the power, the green. Right, what was that? I don't remember.
And then you figure too after the whole Heroes in Crisis stuff too, when she came back as like a plant person, like an actual plant person.
Yeah, but.
Well, and Swamp Thing's a straight up killer at times. Yeah. So
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like that is her characterization. It's not that far off.
And then, too, it's just she falls into every, like, thing of, like, Batman villain. We're going to eventually make them into a good person so we can sell books about them. Mm-hmm. Because they won't buy villain books. Because you figure, like...
Like Harley.
Yeah, Harley. Harley's
a prime example of that.
I mean, they've done it a couple of times. Like, there for a while, like, the Riddler was a good guy. He was, like, a private detective. And they've done that kind of, you know, that kind of stuff with, like... With all the big characters like Batman and Spider-Man, like all like the villains, they eventually try to make him kind of good sometimes. So.
I'm really waiting for the Condiment King. It's going to be gritty and hardcore.
Oh, I think you could do a whole book that's just, you know, Batman. Batman face. Rogues on parole. And just see him doing, you know, parolee jobs.
Picking up trash on the side of the road.
I'm looking forward to the Tom King Clay Man, Kite Man, you know, 6-issue mini.
That needs to be a maxi. I mean, that's there.
Oh, that's true. I don't want to commit 12 issues to Kite Man. Mm. No offense.
Since
we already know that Inferior 5 couldn't do 12, I don't know if...
Well, if Kite Man's actually in the book, it might work.
Another one
is
of those.
That,
is that one
in Legion? You know, I will tell you, this is a preview for next week, but just having the characters actually in the book doesn't necessarily make it any better.
Okay.
If you can read between the lines. It was enjoyable seeing, it was a Newsarama review, and it was 5 out of 10. I'm like, okay, good. I wasn't being unduly harsh. Someone else was not a fan. So, not vague tweeting, but whatever. I think you all know what I'm talking about. We did have an in-store appearance by Ibti. And he decided to handwrite. We have handwritten questions submitted. Burning podcast questions. Number one, remember the 5th of November. Since yesterday was Guy Fawkes Day, what's your review of V for Vendetta, comic book or movie? I found the movie to be really good. I know it varied from the book a good bit, but I thought...
Did you read the book? Or?
Yeah, yeah. I've read it a while back, but I know like the end was different and things, but I enjoyed the movie... Yeah. A lot.
The movie was like entertaining.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Well, the book,
the book is very dated art wise. I tried to read it again probably 5-6 years ago, and I really struggled with it.
I don't think it's the, I think it's the coloring.
Okay, that could.
That's
be.
What I think. That it could is. Be. It's not because I think the art's pretty timeless, but the it's the coloring. Okay. It's got a weird watercolor.
Okay, that could be. I just remember reading it, and I was just like, I can't do it.
But. The book is very, like, neither side is like cut and dry. The good guy, and I think because of that, it's very Alan Moore-y, because it's you don't really know who's the good guy, and yeah, oh sorry, and then
no, but I'm just saying
very no, Alan he can't he stop saying the name.
I'd love him to come by. Well, I have lots of questions for him.
And then the movie.
He's gonna come and snack.
The movie waters all that down, and the movie reminds me of the Bush era, a lot, just because like the time that was and how they kind of changed the narrative, but I don't know. That's by the same people who did the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has a lot of the airy kung fu-y. Matrix like effects on that, so I don't know. I don't have a huge desire to rewatch either, so
yeah,
but
because like I can't watch it here and I don't really have the time, you know, I've hard enough time finding time to watch the stuff I want to watch.
So, what made that R? Is this just some cursing, probably?
Probably cursing, violence, not something.
It's not that violent.
No, well, there were that one scene at the end, especially the kill scene. But, how many trick-or-treaters did you get last week for Halloween? What was the best costume? I didn't get any because I was actually here. I was going to leave early to get home to do the trick-or-treating, but the weather was so bad and everybody was canceling, and I just kind of went, sorry, guys. Yeah. Plus, I didn't know how the dogs would react to people, and I just didn't want to. I didn't want to deal with the whole thing, so...
You were out snatching little kids' bags.
No, I went for... I was here, and then I went grocery shopping, and then I went home, so...
Yeah. I saw a kid in the... or I had a trick-or-treater who was in one of those Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Okay.
The ones that, like, blow up. That was pretty good.
I have a single trick-or-treater. I haven't had a trick-or-treater in 12 years. It's great.
Gotta turn the light on, man.
No, the police said I can't open the door. No, I live out in the country, so we just don't get trick-or-treaters.
Yeah, I
probably... Say if you did have somebody knock on your door in costume and ask for some candy, would you go and, like, just give them a candy bar for the effort? Like,
I don't know that I even have a candy... I take it back. I do have, like, some little Hershey miniatures, and they're all special darks, because she'll buy this big-ass bag, and I'm like, why do you do that? You don't eat special darks. She's like, well, you like them. I said, yeah, but I'll have one, or maybe two pieces. I'm not going to eat 50 pieces, because you got an 800-pound bag of this. So, I got a bag full of special darks at home.
And the kids will be,
thanks. Yeah, exactly. It's like, might be.
Get the eggs!
No, because you get the eggs, I get the gun.
Okay.
That's how that works.
Dave! Any trick-or-treaters?
No.
Nothing notable?
I have a condominium. But I was at my parents' house. They probably only had a 10.
Okay.
Or so.
Spencer just throws but hoagies at them.
A lot less than... A lot. It's been going down for a number of years.
Okay. What's your hype level for the new Star Wars movie? Not good.
I'd say like an 8.
3. I didn't like the last two.
What are
two.
Our scales?
1 to 10.
I was on a 10.
Yeah, I was on a 10. I didn't like the last two movies, so I'm not excited about it. Yeah.
I don't know. I want to see it. I liked that it went back to J.J. Abrams so he can finish the story. I think the problem was him and Rian Johnson were never on the same page with what was going to happen. You know, look, Lucas is Lucas. But at least there was a unifying force throughout to tell the story. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that with this trilogy, and I think it suffered the first two because of that. With Abrams back on it, though, I trust that he's going to wrap it up in a good way. You know, I think that one of the other problems with this trilogy in particular was the idea that the first one was going to be Han's story. The second one was going to be Luke's story. The third one was going to be Leia's story. And then when Carrie Fisher died, it was kind of like, shit, what do we do now? That's going to be problematic.
C-3PO's story, obviously, from the trailer. Yeah. So.
Well, Lando's in it, too.
Right.
Yeah, I bet C-3PO is in that movie for 45 seconds.
I hope that that's
And we've seen 15 of them already.
I really hope that that's the case.
Yeah.
There was an.
I was listening to something. I forget what it, I don't know what it was, but they were really making fun of it because they're like, wait, your friends, he wants to see his friends. Who are your friends? None of your friends are here. What are you talking about?
R2-D2?
That's it. You know, everybody else is dead. You know.
I'm at a 10 just because Star Wars has been my thing my entire life, so I can't wait.
I've got my ticket already, so.
I mean, I'm definitely going to go see it, but I'm not going to buy my tickets months in advance.
That C-3PO moment in the trailer that was weird because Poe Dameron says he talks like he has no clue what C-3PO is doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, what are you doing there, 3PO? And it's like, you think everybody knows what they're doing if it's like a big plot point or something.
Yeah, but who knows? There's so much now with the you can't trust a trailer.
Oh, no.
Especially the Disney one.
Yeah.
They film stuff that doesn't get cut. Right. They tack scenes together. Like from the first trailer where she jumps over the TIE fighter. They show the hands like it's Kylo Ren's gloves. Yeah. But I bet it's not even Kylo Ren in that scene. So
she probably never puts the robe on. She never goes dark. Yeah. They just film that to throw everybody off on what happens.
Yeah, like in, what was it, Rogue One, where she's in the the Empire uniform. She was never that.
Someone came up with the theory that they're training together, too. It is Kylo Ren, but Rey and Kylo Ren are training together.
Yeah, let's practice jumping over.
And then oops,
what could go wrong? You know.
Yeah. And I heard the theory that, because I guess in one of the recent Star Wars Age of Resistance issues, there's Kylo Ren is like training and he gets pushed down a hill or something and catches himself before he hits the ground.
Yeah, yeah,
so there's people speculating that in the movie, he's gonna do like an Emperor Palpatine. And catch himself and then climb back up the hill. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's the rise of the Skywalker or whatever.
Okay. Oh.
So that's the theory based on the comic. Hmm. But
I'll go see it, but I'm not as hyped for it as I was for.
Yeah. The other thing is I don't have expectations for it anymore. Because, it could be completely terrible. It doesn't really matter because I'll still, you know, watch the next one that they put out, and I'll still watch The Mandalorian and all that stuff.
I'm really looking forward to that. But no one, I've said this before, no one hates a Star Wars movie like a Star Wars fan. And at our age bracket, it's going to be, this isn't the Star Wars I remember. Well, you're right, it isn't. You know, they got to hook new fans because we're going to die off. So they need someone else. We're not buying toys anymore. Well, okay.
Some of us.
Yeah. We're not buying as many toys anymore.
There's the title, We're Gonna Die Off.
That's true. Everybody dies. It's like poop. Everybody poops.
I that's what I was right now. I like that. He already has the clown costume. I like that. That will throw everyone off. They won't know.
That's true.
You could probably play the Mandalorian in the store.
Hopefully, yeah.
No.
Well, you know what, though? But you would have thought the same thing about Titans, and they're going to drop the F-bomb. I mean,
though I am concerned because the TV's running on a Fire Stick, and I was hearing there was a pissing contest between Amazon and Disney. Disney. Yeah.
Mm. Don't you have the Chromecast, though?
I do. That's on the other TV, yeah. So, okay.
Is that a smart TV?
No. It's a Fire Stick plugged into the back. It's a dumb TV. Sorry.
Derp.
I have a smart TV at home. What do you want to see in the last issue of Doomsday Clock in order for the miniseries to stick the landing? I haven't known what was coming in this in any way, shape, or form, so I have no expectations. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see a little more Mime and Marionette. Because they haven't been in the last couple issues, but I thoroughly enjoyed them.
Do we think there's going to be a big brawl between Superman and...
There's going to be something. Yeah, I hope. Mr. Terrific, that's not it. Doc Manhattan doesn't just go poof and he's gone. You know, I hope there's something to it.
Well, and that's Superman is not going to kill Dr. Manhattan. We all know that. So something else has to happen. Maybe it's Mime and Marionette that kill him. Come up behind him with their imaginary rope and cut his head off or something.
The garrote.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. But yeah, I just want to read it. You know, I just want to see what his vision is. So. Rank these North American food items from least to most favorite. Canadian poutine, American hot dog, and Mexican taco.
Taco
dog
poutine.
I
agree. Taco dog poutine.
I put taco poutine hot dog only because I can't eat hot dogs. So. That's
specific. Yeah, but when was the last time you ate poutine? The other thing is, poutine in Canada is very different than American poutine.
It was funny. I actually had it. There's what's that place? Meat and Potatoes downtown, and I had ordered that, and that was very funny because I ordered that, and Sandy was all, "Ooh, look at you, Mr. Fancy." She got her braised,
it's French fries, Brussels sprouts or something.
And then when they brought it out, she was like, "Oh," I'm like, "You didn't know what poutine was?" I did. So I thought she thought I was being fancy.
Fancy.
Yeah, ooh, fancy. French fries with gravy and cheese. Yeah. Which Superman origin story is the best? John Byrne's Man of Steel, Mark Waid's Birthright, Geoff Johns' Secret Origin, or Frank Miller's Year One?
Man of Steel.
See, I figured Year One was going to get all the votes.
I've only read Secret Origins.
Right up to the point where you got to the second issue, I'd agree with you.
I've never read Birthright, but yeah, I'd have to say Man of Steel.
I haven't read Birthright.
How about All-Star Superman?
Or
Superman for All Seasons.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
American Alien?
Yeah.
I love Superman for All Seasons. It's great.
Yeah.
I still think it's Man of Steel. I think that's the best one.
And then last one. Since Joker will eventually make $1 billion worldwide, what DC property would you like to see done as a low-budget, character-driven movie?
Hawkman.
And I want it to be low-budget, though?
Yeah, I think you could. Because you stick to more of like an Indiana Jones style and maybe not have him become Hawkman until like the last 15, 20 minutes of the movie.
Just have him carry around a big mace the whole time, but with no wings.
I think you could do Mr. Freeze. With the Mr. Freeze origin. Get like,
yeah.
Get Arnold to reprise his.
But like, I think,
nice to meet you.
Yeah, like I think you could do a convincing Mr. Freeze special effect pretty easily. And I think that's... you know, it's a tragic story.
Yeah. No, that is a good one.
Seeing the question could be an interesting one.
I would say, whenever it comes to those kinds of things, I always go with, like, the question.
I was going to say in a detective story with Elongated Man and Sue Dibney. Like a noir story with Elongated
Man. Why are you flipping Dave off, Tim? Man! Rude.
No, we're Tim's been Tim flipping and I, me off Tim all day. And I,
I forget what I said. I know what I said. Yeah, I deserved it. I deserved that.
On the pre-show, Tim and I were so on the same page.
And Clayface, That would be another.
That one I don't think you can do at low budget.
I think as long as you don't turn him into a monster early on, if as long as like most of the picture he's, you know, just kind of manipulating his face and he's, you know, trying to get acting gigs or whatever, go, you know, Batman the Animated Series style. I think you could do that. And I think it, you know, the Joker kind of covered that ground a little bit with the, you know, the kind of the idea of.
So what you're saying, no redemption arc for him. It's all about him just being rejected. Just
total tragedy. Then, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That way I could see it working.
Because I think you'd do the Mr. Freeze the same way, where it's like, you know, you don't have him bring back his wife in the same movie.
But I think ultimately, you know, despite what they just did in the comics, you never bring back his wife. Nora's gone because that has to be his driving force. Mm-hmm. And that's what's got to happen in Detective.
Oh, yeah.
He has to lose her. Otherwise, he has no reason to continue being Mr. Freeze.
He just become another good guy.
Yeah. But I feel like they should keep her around for a couple of years just to explore that storyline a little bit. Maybe, like, grow their relationship before you kill her off again.
She's going to melt.
Keep her and kill him.
Oh, that's Ooh. A... Yeah.
Mrs. Freeze.
Yeah, that would trigger a lot of people. So I'm all for it.
Condiment King. I want to see it. Big budget. It's gonna unseat Endgame.
Jesse Eisenberg is Lex Luthor. Make it happen.
Like Deathstroke film. Could be an interesting cheap, you know, movie.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that could be cheap though. Even though it's not a lot of CGI, it's a lot of firearms and they get expensive.
Yeah, but John Wick was like low budget, right? Wasn't it? The first John Wick like 50 million? Because what do you consider low budget? I would say under 60 million is low budget nowadays.
Yeah. Maybe. But I think the other thing that worked so well with the Joker was the time period they set it in.
Yeah.
It, because you could go cheap. You wanted it to be gritty. You wanted it to be grimy. John Wick. Maybe it was only 60, 70 million. But
yeah.
You want to spend like 30 million and make like 300-400 million. You want like Saul. That's how you want it to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pat.
What?
What'd you read?
I read books, Colin. So, Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Death of Superman.
I read that.
Yeah. Didn't get to it yet.
So.
I heard Superman dies in it.
He does. Okay. It's unfortunate. He dies a couple times.
Yeah. Harsh.
Yeah. So Superman dies, you know, the regular story we know it with Doomsday. The Eradicator comes, puts him in the Genesis chamber, and then realizes, oh, I can't save him, but I gotta give his power off. Lois takes it. And Lois she destroys anything remotely evil.
It's getting to the point like you better not jaywalk.
Yeah, that's almost what it was. You ate a grape and didn't pay for it, Zat. The way, if you've ever seen Don Cheadle as Captain Planet, that's where she went, but with Superman's powers. Batman confronts her. Batman doesn't survive. Superman eventually comes back. And
mullet and everything.
Yeah, straight up mullet and everything. And she realizes he's too weak. Like he's not what she wants, and you know, so she takes care of him. It was really good, and it was different, and there's enough. It's like Nightfall, where it hits enough story beats from the story you know. To make it resonate,
yeah.
But it just goes off on a tangent where you didn't expect.
And also, like, did good parts of, like, bringing up, like, Lois kind of had, like had some good points, too, because she got mad at, like, the whole Justice League because she was like, you know, like, where were you guys at where this was happening? You just let him do, you know, by himself, and then she starts, you know, that's when she starts taking people out.
That's the argument you can make, though, in every one of their books.
Yeah,
but the Justice League, if you in the original story, the Justice League was getting their hats handed to
them. Yeah, but that was
they were.
Yeah. So
that was like the Boost of Gold Justice League, though.
Yeah, but that was a Justice League.
But that was a Justice League at the time. I'm just saying it's not like it's a good Justice League, though.
That's a really good one.
And the other thing is that story probably only takes like place over like 2 hours. Like Doomsday breaks out and then basically just makes his way to Metropolis. So I don't know. I didn't really like this was fine, but like it wasn't as good as the other. The Dark Knight one, and I just felt like Lois was, like cartoonishly
evil,
like out of
I don't think she was evil, not till the end. I think it was, but yeah, I think she lost her shit.
Yeah, because I feel like it's a dark multiverse, so you know that explains away a lot. But like, I think her internal conflict would have been a little greater. And, you know, the format, though, you know, this is a one-shot. Yeah. That has a little bit to do with it, but I don't know.
You know what, though, but even to that point, we don't know how long the story took place. And it may be just like, well, the original Death of Superman only took place over...
Yeah, and there's a montage.
You know, a couple hours.
There's a montage that, like, probably happened over weeks. Not like she's just...
No, you know. I'm thinking it was probably a month or so was the whole story.
So.
I don't know. The book endings by Farragut, whatever the hell his name is, they can lose those. I don't think it's necessary. Because it's, I don't know if I'll be able to find heroes here. Yeah, okay, we don't care. Just get him in the story.
Yeah. It's like the Crypt Keeper, you know? You need him to, like, you know, like...
I always liked the Crypt Keeper.
Well, yeah, it's a poor version of the Crypt Keeper. But I'm saying it's the same story device, you know? You need that.
Yeah. Yeah, Crypt Keeper had a good look.
And the puns.
Yeah, exactly. Joker Killer Smile.
There, that.
I didn't like it.
See, I liked it. I thought I enjoyed it.
It was okay. But... So Harleen also came out.
Yeah.
And then the week before, or 2 weeks before, we got the Criminal Insanity. And maybe unfairly, I'm judging them by those two books. Yeah. And I like them a lot better.
See, that's what we were talking about before. I didn't read either one of those two, so maybe like with not reading those, but I thought like it looked cool. I like the because going with like the his origins and just messing with the therapist and all that kind of stuff, you know. And maybe I might be biased because I just really like the creative team on it too.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah, so no, I might be looking at it through.
I like Jeff Lemire, but...
Yeah.
So Harleen, because it's her before she becomes Harley Quinn, is also touching upon her therapy sessions with the Joker, mm-hmm. and I think that...
Somebody should have said, hey, we don't need these
books out at the same time. Yeah, let's, you know, push one off 6 months or whatever. That would have made it better. Especially since Harleen is coming out monthly, not bi-monthly.
Yeah.
It really wouldn't have pushed it off that much. Harley number two, I still enjoying this. She's walking, you know, further down her path to becoming Harley Quinn. Now seems to be where she finally, succumbs to the Joker's charms. You know, we all know the story, so.
Has she called him Puddin' yet? Or Mr. J?
She started calling him Mr. J in the last book. That's what he told her to call him. You know, but at first, you're reading it, and of course, all I hear in my head is Arlene Sorkin.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's... Chrononauts.
Yeah.
Future Shock.
I read those.
Did you read all four?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I enjoyed the story.
Yeah.
The fact that they binge-dropped them is bullshit.
No, you like that?
It was absolutely a marketing ploy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that they did that. Because if you're going to do that, just drop. Just do it as a trade. Yeah. There's no need to do the four books.
Well, then it doesn't, you can't make fun with the gimmick of the time travel and, you know. Because that was like, oh, time got messed up, so they all came out at the same time. I mean, it's stupid. Yeah, I grant you that. Yeah. But I'm just saying that was the gimmick of the book.
But ignoring that part.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the book.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was kind of
surprised. I love the story.
I was kind of surprised because I've been like pretty iffy on the Malaw books recently, yeah. And I really enjoyed this one.
So my original plan was, okay, they dropped all four. I'm not happy about it. I'll read one a week.
Yeah.
And I got to the end of the first one. I was like, oh, I can't stop here. Yeah. Now I got to get the next one.
Yeah.
And at the end of the second one, I was like, oh, now I got to read it. So that kind of worked out.
It wasn't a chore to read it at all.
No. I flew through all four books in like 20 minutes or, you know, they read fast. The art was good. It isn't Sean Gordon Murphy, but it looks like Sean Gordon
Murphy.
Yeah,
it kind of has a kind of sketchy kind of that style to it.
Yeah.
And the story, like, it even, like, it kind of almost even made sense with all the time travel stuff, like, you know, because, like, I was enjoying it, like, halfway through, but I was like, how is this going to make any sense by the end? And they kind of do, like, a good job with that.
And there's a part where I think it's Corbin is fighting Dr. Cross, and then there's a whole bunch of them. So that whole thing reminded me of, like, something from Bill and Ted. We're like, oh, well, yeah. I'll go back and get mine.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back and get mine. I was just waiting for someone to say, but you forget. Only the one that wins gets to go back.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking while I was reading it. Corbin and Danny, they kind of are like the Bill and Ted of...
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say the Bill and Ted of time travel because Bill and Ted do that.
They're the Bill and Ted of the Malarverse.
Right.
Of smart time travel because, you
right,
know... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't lock into it. They figured this out. But no, it was good.
What I liked too was the story had heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like Mark Miller when he does stories that have heart, especially with the story about Danny and his dying mom.
Yeah. And that felt a little Star-Lord-y to me though.
It did. Yeah. But my favorite Mark Millar stories of the past few years, you know, are Hawk and Starlight. When he puts a little bit of heart into his stories, they turn out. They really appeal to me. So. Along with all the crazy time travel stuff and theories and about how the professor planted all these seeds to...
Yeah, I like how they kept on saying, like, you know, like...
He planted Pong in 1972.
Yeah, like all the stuff that we know is only there because he put it there.
Right. That was great.
We'll just create video games. Yeah. That'll stop race riots.
Yeah. Yep, the opium for the masses.
Not exactly sure how all that worked, but sure, why not?
Sure, exactly right.
There's a 10-year-old kid that 300 years from now is going to cause massive race riots.
Right, just go with it.
Yeah.
Because it was very entertaining.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that. Deceased, number 6.
Yeah.
Did you read that, Colin?
I did.
Okay. Because you hadn't read anything. That's what I was asking.
Well, I hadn't read those, but I did read that. I got 6 in.
Yeah. No, Deceased, I think it stuck the landing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was good. I enjoyed when Wonder Woman decapitated Cyborg. I thought that was like, there's going to... okay. I guess he's not going to save the day.
I like when Ollie shot Aquaman riding the Kraken in the eye. I was like, seeing Batman, thought I wasn't dangerous. I thought that was pretty good. But they're going off to their own Earth 2 now.
Yeah.
The
Green Lantern Corps showed up to, like, try to, like, quarantine Earth so that it doesn't spread throughout the universe more.
Which I don't know how it would, because they really don't have a way to space travel.
Well, you got like when you have people like Superman and
was
and
dead then, at that point.
But I mean, he could still travel through space onto a different planet and start killing people on that planet.
I thought he was dead before they quarantined it.
No, because remember, after he goes flying into the sun, though.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And then they quarantine it because he's going to kill the whole...
He's going to kill the whole solar system.
Yeah.
But really, he isn't going to kill the solar system. The solar system was going to kill the solar system, so nothing was going to survive anyway. I don't know. It was good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It sucked the land. It was... The series was much better than I think it had any right being.
Yeah.
Because it very easily could have been a ripoff of Marvel Zombies, and it really wasn't.
I just think they pull Marvel and bring a, you know, like a sequel to it here.
But they could.
Oh, they could, yeah. They definitely leave it open for it. But.
Yeah, you know, someone else can get in. Or someone brought a cell phone with them from Earth 1 to Earth 2, which, not that they're cell phone networks, but,
yeah,
that could somehow cause an outbreak. And the last one I read was Batman Annual number 4. Bye, Tim.
Bye, Tim.
Yeah, I read that, too.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
It was
an annual.
Yeah, it was...
Basically, a Quintana and Black Lightning issue for the most part.
Batman Annual?
I thought you...
Not Batman the Outsiders. Yeah,
I was going to say, you read something different than I did. Yeah.
Nope, sorry.
Batman Annual was an excerpt from Alfred's journal, and basically, you know, kind
of... A day in the life of Batman? Or a month in the life of Batman.
Yeah, and it was, you know, each day he, you know... Every day it was something more ridiculous, and somehow he managed to accomplish it.
Dragons?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was like on page 2.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked it, because you got every flavor of Batman in a nice package, and they got progressively shorter and shorter and shorter.
Yeah, until at the end it was just like...
A panel.
Yeah, well, it was just a panel, and it was the date, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought it was a good annual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I read.
I thought the art was real good too.
Yeah. And I especially liked the, I think it was like a page or two that was sort of a Sherlock Holmes where,
With the family members?
Yeah, with the family members. And Batman's like, everybody knows the biggest pyramids in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
So... But yeah, because I think
thought it was going to be the war friend because he was looking at the daffodils, but it was in March. And I thought that was I thought I'd figured that one out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish they'd do that one more with Batman, just pure detective.
Yeah, I mean, that's what one of like the detective books should be detective stories, and then Batman can be the title where he punches like. Things and you know, like in the face, and you know, is doing Justice League stuff and that kind of thing.
Justice League stuff.
Spencer.
Okay. I'll do that.
Mr. Spencer.
Batman and the Outsiders.
Oh, did you read that?
I did read that.
I didn't realize
animal.
That. Okay.
So, like I was saying before, it's kind of just like a Katana and Black Lightning story. They do a flashback to where, like, Katana's, like, ancestor is the one who trapped the demon in the sword of her sword and all that stuff. And so we flash from inside the sword where that demon is torturing her husband, that soul's in there, and to go and try to save him, you know, not to get out of the sword, but from, you know, from being tortured and all that stuff, because she can see, like, and hear everything going on, she stabs herself with the sword, so then she can go inside and stops it and stuff. But while that's going on, Black Lightning has to protect the body from all these ninjas attacking them on this rooftop, so that she can eventually come back, which she does. It was an alright story. They really, like, they're really kind of building up, like, this, like, love interest between those two characters and stuff, which is alright with it. You know, they're both original, you know, outsider members, so it's kind of cool. The Nightwing Annual, number 2. This is what should have been... Like, this story should have took a place immediately after issue 50 when he got shot. Okay. It's all of, like, the rehab and the doctors trying to figure out what's with his memory and just, like, everybody in the Bat family coping with it and just, like, and all that kind of stuff. I don't know why they waited, like, a year and a half to try to tell that story.
To sell you 18 more books.
Yeah, I guess. Well, no, because if they would have done that... First, it would have made those other issues better because during that whole time, I'm just like, this makes no sense because these, like, the way he's acting and everything, it's just, it's so weird. And just from one issue to the next, there was nothing there. Like,
Spencer, you just don't know Dick.
I guess I don't. So Bruce gets this, this brain, not surgeon, but, like, who's, like, really, like, the best in the field of with, like, with amnesia and, like, that kind of stuff. And she, you know, is having sessions with them, and they show the last thing that they try to do to jog Dick's memory about everybody is they take him to the mansion, and the doctor waits outside, and they take him down into the Batcave and show him, like, everything and stuff. And he gets all mad, and he leaves. And, it ends with, because there's a lot of jumping back and forth from their last doctor meeting, and whenever he finally leaves, and it reveals that, that the doctor was, is in the Court of Owls, so that, like, she, the stuff that she was doing... instead of helping him gain his memories back, is, like, help cementing him to forget those memories so that they can eventually come back, like, and get, like, what they're kind of doing in the Cohen storyline on the ongoing and have him to be, you know, a member of the, you know, a talent and all that stuff. And they do some back history with, they show, like, his family when they were in Gotham, one of, like, his great aunts or something, they were able to go to, like, their house for Thanksgiving dinner and then had an actual Thanksgiving instead of being on the road with the circus. And it seemed like that family as well, you know, they were one of the last Graysons, so they kind of were in the Owls, too, and stuff like that. Baskets Full Ahead, number 1.
Mm-hmm. I read that.
I liked it. I mean, and it was a lot of, like, prep and setup, but I enjoyed it. I really liked the art in it. The characters were kind of cool, you know. It was what the 60s or early 70s, just kind of by looking by all
had the a 70s vibe.
Yeah. All the hair and stuff like that. So it's summertime and the, I forget the name of the character, but he's a deputy for, like, the summer just to make some ends meet. And he picks his girlfriend up, who's waiting for him sitting on a bridge, and they, heading back into town, and they find the sheriff who, is on this call because one, they had, like, a chain gang out there doing stuff, and two of the members made a run for it. So of course this new guy, the kid, he wants to help, but he tells him to just go back to the house because, like, the sheriff has, like, a summer house where the kid's staying at. To tell him to go back there to keep an eye on his wife and his son that's there. And
yeah, but and not like a young son, like an adult son.
Yeah, seem like they're about the same age. But they seem kind of really rich for just being a sheriff. Like, that was, like, a pretty nice big house. Like.
Yeah, but it's Maine.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, I always think of Maine as being full of rich people. Like, rich waspy people. But, they think, I think there were four prisoners, right?
Were there four that got away?
Yeah, because they think some of them stole a boat. Right. At the end of the cliffhanger, you only see two.
Okay, I thought it was so two. Maybe, I thought it was two. They split apart or something.
Yeah, maybe they split apart. Who knows? Because I think, like, there's probably two unaccounted for.
Yeah.
Because, like, in this, we see the antique axe.
Right? Yeah.
But we don't...
Glowed.
Or was it, like, a blood color?
Oh, see, I thought it was... Well, maybe, but I thought it, like, it reacted to something.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, like, a weird, like, red vine thing in it, Dad.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's going to be the girl who becomes the serial killer.
Oh, yeah, because in the opening, like, you see, like, somebody with bath, like walking in the rain with the top over it, and it looked like a smaller, petiter person. Yeah. So.
And they're on the
carrying
bridge.
Carrying a basket.
Yeah.
The bridge where...
I wonder what's in the basket.
Heads, probably.
Yeah.
That's a reach. I don't think so.
But the heads talk, right?
Yeah. Well, because talking to her. Because if you read the thing for it, the axe has the ability to cut any person's head off in one swoop, but their head stays conscious and alive and can talk and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really dug that. And, it's got a very Stephen King-y
feel. Yeah.
Shockingly.
Yeah, so. if you're a fan of either one of those two, you'd probably like this book. And then I'll talk about TMNT 99. So this pretty
Poor
much...
Mike missed it.
Yeah. Man. So this picks up like right where the last issue... leaves off with, like, everybody at the press conference getting turned into different kind of mutants by Old Herb, and he is, after turning everybody, he then rescues them, so I don't know if his plan is to try to, like, you know, he turns all these people into mutants, and then he saves the mutants, and then, like, oh, look, you guys, you know, because I don't think they know who did it, they don't know that everybody's gonna try to attack them because they're mutants. And then, so they're able to make it out of there, and then Splinter he's like in jail in the castle, but he's getting visited by the Rat King, who's like, hey, I can get you out of here real simple. All you have to do is, you know, kind of be like my servant, and, you know, you can, you know, I'll get you out of here, Splinter. You have something to eat, you know, drink, you know, you feel better, and all that stuff. And he's like, no. And he starts, you know, punching the wall, you know, doing some karate until he eventually punches through the wall after, you know, a lot of punches, and escapes. Then on the other storyline that's going on is the Totals are going to try to rescue the scientist Howard and his wife, who are being being held hostage by Metalhead, because he's trying to get them to remake the teleporter, and they said they've done everything, it should work, but Metalhead's upset because he's like, there's some kind of, all the simulations he's running say that they shouldn't work, but it worked before. And then, you know, when they come in to try to save him, Donnie, because Metalhead's basically a print of Donnie's brain, for the most part. And they have this big spiel about how, you know, it's like, you know, you kind of have to have faith in the work that you're doing. And with him being, like, an artificial, you know, AI, that he can't have that. But with working, you know, with his friends, he has that faith, and he's able to use the teleporter to get the drop on Metalhead to, you basically, like, kind of like an EMT kind of thing that he sticks on him and shuts him down. And then so him, Leo, and Mikey use the teleporter to go into the Foot Clan's hideout at the government agency that's also after everybody. And, like, texts and calls all of, like, you know, all the allies, like April and all of them, to meet there. And they leave the portal open so the government can come through to cause another, like, kind of, like, big fight that has to force the Foot Clan, like, against them to where then the Toters can try to get the upper hand. But, it's a nice thicker, it's one of those, like, $8 issues, but it has, like, a nice, like, little spine to it. Decent amount of weight, and then in the back it has a preview of the Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers crossover that's coming out, which at least through that, the art at least looks pretty cool through that. I mean, I'm gonna get it because it's Turtles, so, but
you like Turtles.
I like Turtles. And then that's it.
Alright, I read Venom number 19, which is a Absolute Carnage tie-in.
That's almost over, right?
Yeah. this is another issue where they kind of just
do some stuff.
I feel like they're just like
dragging their feet.
They're dragging their feet. They're just juggling with you know, the flaming torches, but nothing's actually happening. So at the end of this issue, we're left basically in the same spot we were. Brock has still not told his son
that he's his son,
and his son has not told him that he's half symbiote. So I know in the next
issue.
So I'm thinking that once this is resolved, like, that kid's probably gonna die. I think, like, they might kill all the symbiotes. Who knows?
Well, maybe or since he's part symbiote, he'll become the symbiote that's on Eddie or something.
Who knows?
See, like, it's been a while since I've read any Venom because I trade-weighted on it. Mm-hmm. So did he have he had him after he already became, like, had the Venom?
Yeah.
Because I could have sworn...
I'm thinking that's why he's half...
like I said, it's been a while, so I thought, like, he had the kid before he even had... Like before.
No, it doesn't seem to be.
Okay.
I'm.
Because that kid's like.
I don't even know who the mom is. Like, I think they explained that, but I don't remember.
Because how old is the kid? At least like 10, right?
Yeah.
So he's had to been Venom for like 10 years, at least.
Okay. Yeah. Who knows? But,
It's just because that gets weird with the timeline when they try to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like the soap opera where they have the baby and then. 2 years later, the kid's 18.
Yeah.
So.
Great storytelling.
Silver Surfer Black. This is the fifth and final issue. So, the reason it's called Silver Surfer Black is because Silver Surfer has been taken over by, like, Null. So he's slowly losing his light, his, you know, the power cosmic. So... you know, in the last issue, he, with the help of one of the Watchers, he figures out, oh, I can't kill Galactus, so I can't, you know, prevent the whole thing, and I can't prevent becoming Silver Surfer, but, so, how am I going to beat Null? He decides that the way to fight the dark is to make more light, so he basically, this is, like, happening in the past, so he basically seeds all these planets with life. And that seems to be how he's defeating Null, but at the end of the issue, he is completely in black now. And so I have no idea what they're going to, you know, do with a symbiote poisoned Silver Surfer in the future.
Venom Island.
Yeah. Okay. Who knows? Because it seems like he's stuck in the past. So... probably resolve it outside of our, you know, current continuity time stream, but it seems like Silver Surfer was responsible for, you know, seeding a lot of the universe with life, and at least it doesn't seem like he visited Earth. It seems like it was other planets that Galactus eventually destroys. But
okay.
I don't know. This was a really good issue, or really good series, just for the art. The art in it is absolutely amazing. I'm flaking on who's the artist. But it's,
let's see over there. Yeah.
What's his name? Oh, Tradmore.
Yeah. So, get it in trade just for the art. It's a standalone series. It's very trippy. Conan the Barbarian, number 20. So in this, we're, this series has been, Jason Aaron's been just kind of like, he's been telling the sort of an overarching story while doing basically one-shot issues. Now we are to the point in issue 20 where he's, like starting to like, explain the master villain who's behind everything. So there's been these like little creepy kids who've been following him. We find out their origin. We find out why the red witch or the red sorceress who's been kind of seemingly masterminding the whole thing, why her head's been chopped off and sewn back on. So and now we have finally seen the last page is the death of Conan. Conan is sitting in a pile of rubble with some, like, stakes through his chest, and, you know, we'll see what happens next.
He can't survive that.
Yeah. So, the series has been really good. It ties in a lot to actual, like, the original Conan novels. There's a lot of tie-ins to that throughout it, little Easter eggs for people who are big Conan fans, and I appreciate that. Savage Avengers Annual Number 1.
Ooh, was it the best?
This was really good, actually. Was
it? Okay, cool. How savage, like, is it?
I know it had Hellstrom and...
Yeah, Hellstrom and Black Widow and of course, Conan. And then one person that I was going to ask you guys about, because I'm not totally familiar, Steph Rogers. So... in this issue, it picks up off of why this is an annual and not just part of the series. I have no idea, but it definitely ties right in with where the series has been. This could easily have been issue 7 instead of an annual. So, when last we left Conan traveled with, Frank Castle from the Savage Land to South America with his kids, or not his kids, the corpses of Frank Castle's family. So Conan decides Stark. To stay in... Yeah, it is. Conan decides to stay in South America while Frank goes back to America to bury his...
Kind of like, yeah, his, you...
Yeah,
you
rebury. Go, yeah. Rebury his family. And so Conan's just... In that issue, Conan's just hanging out in South America. We don't know what he's doing. Well, now we do. He has... he's at, like, a brothel... but he's very frustrated because he's saying, "Oh, I hate this world. All the women are slaves.
I did too.
Yeah. Well, Conan, like, if you follow Conan, like, he's not, I don't know what the word is. There's no good word for it. No. He likes the ladies, but like he doesn't." He's not into slavery.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't like slavers. He doesn't like, you know, oppressing people. He's against all that. Though he is cool with
cutting people's heads off. Though,
yeah, he is. Yeah, he's definitely woke because he is cool with
we got sex a new work. Title right there. Conan is woke.
Yeah. So Conan's frustrated in this place. He ends up kind of taking out the I'll just call it a cartel. The cartel that are doing the slave trade with women. So he takes them out. The slave women give him. They offer money and of course themselves, because this is Conan, to him, so that he'll go save their like sisters and daughters and the other people who are being forced into the slave trade. Cut to the girls in the slave trade. One of them prays not to heaven above, but to you know, the demons below. So Hellstrom comes to answer her prayers, and then cut to the States, where we see Steph Rogers, who isn't she from another dimension?
I have no idea.
So I'm wondering if this doesn't happen in the 616, if the Savage Tale is happening somewhere else. Because I thought that Steph Rogers was a female Captain America from another thing. So anyway, she's there.
Was she the from that John Romita run, or was when Captain America went to the future or something and had that little girl with him?
I thought that was a little boy.
Oh, that was a boy. Okay.
I don't know her origin. Like a girl, but she's,
he can't draw kids.
So she's there talking to, like, she's, you know, on the case of these slave traders, and she's talking to the ship captain about these, and she's like, oh, you know, he says, oh, they're on to South America. So she's like, I'll have some people, like, boots on the ground, and the boots on the ground is Black Widow. So Black Widow and Conan and Hellstrom all converge on this sex trafficking ring, and they, you know, make short work of them. So it's a pretty, like, getting them all there was, like, most of the issue. Once they're there, they actually, like, resolve it pretty quickly, okay. You know, the three of them. But it was definitely a fun issue. A lot of just, like, okay. It almost seems like I have these three completely desperate characters. How do I get them all together for this, you know, to have a little adventure? The last thing I read, not the last thing I read, but I think you probably talked about some of the other stuff, and I'll wait for you.
Uh-oh, pressure's
on. But Doctor Strange Annual. So why this had the cover it had, I have no idea. Because it is totally 100% a Halloween issue.
Okay.
And I didn't read the solicit, but like the cover is Doctor Strange with like the floating Captain America shield and a hammer, and like it has absolutely nothing to do with the issue. The issue is literally about I don't know who this person is, Zeely? Anyway, she comes into Doctor Strange's the Sanctum Sanctorum, and she's dressed as a witch because it's Halloween night, and all of the other like Doctor Voodoo, Scarlet Witch,
what's her name? Talisman. Again? I'm sorry.
I wrote it down. Let me make sure I'm saying it right.
It's Zelma. Like his assistant.
Zelma. You know what? She was from the Jason Aaron run. Okay. I think she was introduced there when she was kind of like, I think she was a librarian or something, and she just helps out. Yeah. Remember her?
Yeah. I read that, out or but something. It didn't click with me.
Yeah.
And then who's Agatha Harkness?
Oh, she was.
She's been around.
She's been around a long time.
So
she was like. Yeah, she's been around a long time. Didn't she have something to do with Scarlet Witch?
Pietro and their kids. Their two kids. The Scarlet Witches had two sons or something, two kids. Or I forget what the deal was. I'm sorry.
Yeah, she's been around.
Was it Wiccan and somebody else?
Oh, yeah. They turned out to be Wiccan and two of the Young Avengers.
Mm-hmm. So, So anyway, she's there too. And they're having like a seance, and Zelma kind of gets in the way. She's very, she's played for, you know, comic relief. So, they end up, I guess the Sanctum Sanctorum was like built on an Indian burial ground or something. So all these spirit Indians or Native Americans come through the Sanctum Sanctorum, and they're, you know,
Conan's woke, burning desert.
Yeah, they're spiritual.
we all try to be as woke as Conan.
I corrected myself. It's all good. This in of itself, having like spiritual burial ground Indians, like that's a little Native Americans. I did it again. Like that's a little not woke, but. Talisman's there. She talks to them. Yeah. She talks to them, kind of satisfies that. But then there's all these nuns that are haunting the Sanctum Sanctorum for some reason. So, all of the team, with the exception of Zelma, they go off into the spirit realm to deal with whatever crisis is, you know, these nuns are having, these dead nuns. And while they're gone, Doctor Strange tells Zelma, don't open the door for anybody. And then there are these two snakes. Yeah, there are these two snakes who, he says, don't listen to the snakes. Don't, you know, don't open the door for anybody. Well, she listens to the snakes. And if these snakes are from something else, I don't remember. But anyway, there's these two snakes. They convince her to open the door. The heroes come back. And she has been kind of overrun by the baddies who have come in, because she opened the door. She was tricked into opening the door while this seance was going on. So now they come back, and then there's it's like a couple waves of like villains coming in for Halloween's Eve. There's like a pumpkin type of thingy and some other stuff, and. Doctor Strange basically comes back. He says, "Why'd you do that?" And then, you know, says a potion or whatever, or says this thing, and they all go away. So really anticlimactic. But this is a book I would not have bought if I knew it was a Halloween tie-in. So they suckered me in there. But yeah. So that's the last thing I'll mention. Colin or nope. Dave.
Read a new series we've mentioned a couple of times. On the podcast, but I read Vampire State Building.
Oh, okay.
The first two issues.
Vampire State Building.
Yes.
I don't know why it appealed. I guess the campy title appealed to me, so I read it. And the art's by Charlie Adler.
Yep.
From Walking Dead.
Oh, okay. Maybe some kids playing basketball.
And they introduce the characters. It's like a group of friends are on the observation deck of the Empire State Building. And they kind of give them, most of them, backstories. And the guy, Terry, he's on his way to Afghanistan to join the army and stationed in Afghanistan. And his cousin thinks he's just going because to run away from his life because he broke up with his girlfriend. And he wants to follow in his dad's footsteps because his dad was in the army. And they're doing some renovations on the Empire State Building, and these two workers find this hidden room in a pillar on one of the floors, and they go in, and there's some...
Vampires.
There's just, like, tribal... It's weird, because the vampires aren't really in the building, but there's some, like, tribal drawings, and it kind of sends out a signal into New York City and homeless people and other people, they start coming in, and they're vampires, and panic ensues.
Oh.
And I thought it was pretty good, actually. It seemed to me like a disaster movie, like an update of the Poseidon Adventure, people in an enclosed space.
Okay. What was that? Towering Inferno.
The Towering Inferno, yeah. But this is with vampires. And the police show up, you know, around, they get word, you know, something's going on in the Empire State Building, but they don't know really what's going on yet. It was interesting. Okay. It was really good. The final issue of Jughead's Time Police.
Ooh.
I have to mention.
Sorry, I'm trying, man. It's a great name.
This is the big battle between 1940s Jughead and the modern day Jughead. It's a crisis on infinite Jugheads because all the Jugheads are on 1940s Jughead's side. Because we have Zombie Jughead from Afterlife with Archie and Werewolf Jughead,
and little
Jughead, and the Jughead from the Riverdale TV show. In the final battle, modern day Jughead, he pulls out the big guns and he shows 1940s Jughead the last hamburger from Pops, which is from, they're either calling him an old man Jughead or I'm calling him Cable Jughead from his this topic, Riverdale timeline, and because the 1940s Jughead, he's been playing with time and he wants to find a better place to go, but. Our Jughead's, you know, showing you don't have to do that. And it does leave it open for a sequel, because on the very last page, who but Hot Dog gets a hold of Jughead's time beanie and goes somewhere into time. Time beanie. So we look forward to the sequel.
Okay.
And, hot dogging through town.
I do want to mention one from 2 weeks ago. Dao Each for Hero.
Okay.
Number 8. This is one of my favorite series. It's so well done. I mean, it's one of these Wonder Comics. I think it's really up there with Wonder Twins. Because this issue is the secret origin of the Operator and Mr. Thunderbolt. And it's told in a really interesting way. Robbie Reed talks about how he found the H-Style. And he wanted to save his grandparents' life. His grandfather was dying. So he goes into the Heroverse to try to get more power so he could save his grandfather, because he doesn't have enough. He doesn't think he has enough power just having the H-Dial. When he finds the Y-Dial, let's try saying that 5 times fast. But I can say this now since it's been 2 weeks, but it splits him into two. And he becomes the Operator, and the evil version of Robbie Reed is Mr. Thunderbolt. And it it's told in an interesting way, because you read it like every two pages, you read it forward every two pages is the Operator story, and then you read it backward every two pages for the story of Mr. Thunderbolt. Okay. So it's kind of split, and then they meet, you know, in the middle. There's a two-page, kind of in the middle at the end. There's a two-page spread of them when they split into, and it's the dual nature of people, and it's just really good. It's a really good series. And that's all I got.
Okay, I just have a couple more. One, Wolvenheart. This is from Mad Cave. And basically, this group, Wolvenheart, is like time travelers who protect the timeline from like supernatural creatures like werewolves and things like that. And they keep everything in check. And as the main guy is taking on this werewolf, he says the Queen in Black is coming before the guy kills him. And then he gets called back to the main office where there's a meeting where Tesla's there. And Van Helsing is giving a speech talking about they're worried about in England because Queen Elizabeth's husband has died and she's in mourning and has shut off their organization from monitoring what was going on in England. And this unknown person has been by her side since the death, and they don't know who he is, but clearly he's some bad guy. So, and the guy mentions that the guy mentioned Queen in Black because she's wearing black because she's in mourning, and they're worried that this is going to lead to something. And the guy, Van Helsing, basically tells the guy, you know, stay here, I need to talk to you. And he's like, no, I'm going to England to figure out what's going on because one of their operatives was murdered. And he goes there and he's talking to some lady, a seer, you know, who has like a crystal ball, and she's talking to him, or he's talking to her. And she does a thing and says, you know, it's too late, they're already here, and then, I don't know if she dies or goes into a coma or something. He's like, okay, I gotta figure this out. And meanwhile, back at the Wolvenheart headquarters, everyone's been murdered. And that's the end. Dun, 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 dun. So, interesting. Just a little book. Excalibur number 1, the next in the X-Men line.
I read that.
It wasn't bad in itself. It's basically just the story of Excalibur coming back and Betsy Braddock becoming the new Captain Britain. Morgan Le Fay is now leader of, what is it, Otherworld? I forget what the name of the British...
It's like Camelot World,
right? Yeah, yeah. She's in charge there, and she doesn't like the idea that there's the Krakoan portal there. And yeah, that's basically setting everything up. My problem with it is I don't know a lot about those characters, especially her brothers and everything. And it starts off with one of the brothers being brought back through the gold balls and that whole mutant regeneration thing. But I don't know who he is. So as they're talking about all the, you know, conflicts, family conflicts, I'm lost. And I'm just, whatever.
What happened to Brian Braddock?
Well, he's still around, but it's another brother that I'd never heard of.
Well, in this, Brian gets taken over by Black Stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. Yeah. But she, Psylocke, grabs his...
It's Betsy. See, that's the big thing. And what you had to know going into this is Psylocke has split, and now it's Betsy Braddock and Psylocke.
But she's still a mutant, right?
She's a mutant.
And they call her Psylocke.
But she doesn't want them to because she's not Psylocke, because Psylocke's a completely different character and a different person.
So that's
who you were supposed to get that from in the very first panel. You see her, she's at a party, and she looks over at this Asian woman, and the Asian woman looks back at her.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to realize that that was Psylocke, and it's like, there's so much going on that they didn't explain, and I think that's my biggest problem so far with these books is X-Men number one was not a good number one. If you've been away from X-Men for 10 years and picked that up, you're lost. This, if you don't, like, I don't know that much about these characters, I was lost reading it.
I know that Psylocke is basically in somebody else's body. I didn't realize that had been undone.
Right, the undead. Just a little text page saying things would have been great.
What's a text message?
Yeah.
Did this have any text pages in it?
No.
What about some thought bubbles? It's been 20 years since we had thought bubbles. Put some thought bubbles.
So not bad, but it was just a little confusing.
Well, no, I would say it was bad.
Okay.
Because it didn't really.
Fair enough.
Nothing in this got me to want to read any more of this. I'm kind of thankful that this one was bad, because I don't want to read six X-Men books.
Right, and the only reason I know that Psylocke is another character, because she's one of the characters in Fallen Angels, is it's her going to redeem herself. So,
maybe it'll make more sense after I read Fallen Angels.
Maybe, but I just this.
But it shouldn't have to.
They're assuming you know all this stuff when clearly people haven't been reading X-Men comics for a while, and this is getting a much bigger audience than would have known about that. So I think that was a mistake there. Mm. And then the last one I read was a pure delight. I read it this morning. Was Sandman Presents Hellblazer.
I read that.
And this is Hellblazer's back in Vertigo, for want of a better word. He's dropping F-bombs. On page 4, he sends Chaz off to his death.
Did he know it was going to be his death?
Yes. Because he was going, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, he knew it was going to be his death. Yes.
Because that seemed out of character.
But that's so John.
Me.
No, that... With Chaz, yes.
Yeah, but Chaz always makes it through. That's why Chaz is
Chaz. Right, but I think in this case, it's the end of the world, and he has to do extreme measures, but it was the fact that, you know, he basically, without saying anything, just sent him off to his death. And then... he meets himself, a future version of himself, or an older version of himself, I should say. And to determine that, he burns his own hand, and the other guy reacts. Because his hand was burned.
Which, I'm going to call, if you're a really good wizard, having a burn scar show up on your hand is not, super hard.
And you think, it wouldn't hurt at that moment. It wouldn't, because
it happened years ago.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So he does that, and basically he's wounded, he's bleeding out, and he has to give him his soul to save everything. And finally he agrees to do it. And then he wakes up, he's in an insane asylum. And he's like, oh, okay, that was just a dream. Great. And then he looks at his hands and there's a cigarette burn on it. He's like, okay, what does this mean? So he basically talks his way out of the asylum. He got a pack of cigarettes by saying to the cashier, no, this isn't just torn newspaper. You're just tired. You're just, doing little illusions to get what he wants. And then in the end, he smashes a window and puts back on his suit and his trench coat. And it's basically John's back. He's smoking. He's swearing. It just everything felt right. Where the last couple of years where he's just been in DC proper, where he's been PG-13, hasn't quite been
Yeah.
Right. It was supposed to be a little darker.
I don't see why you couldn't have just done both. Like, you know, you could have him still in the DC.
And they probably will. He probably will still be appearing in, you know, Justice League Dark and stuff. But it's nice to get this kind of book. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You could have both. I don't know. I think they were thinking that they couldn't have both.
Well, but there was a TV show. You know, a lot was going on there. So, but it felt good. It felt right again.
This did feel like Hellblazer. I don't think I'm going to read on this just because I don't know if this was worse or different in some way, but the English, like the really like English in this, it was a little impenetrable for me.
Oh, okay. See, I liked it because I feel he needs to be written by a Brit.
Yeah. I agree with
that. Because a lot of times when Americans try to write him, it doesn't.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
but this was
crikey. You know, it's they're forcing the British
bollocks. Everything is bollocks.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just thought it was a little thick.
Okay,
for me, and it's been 10 years since I read the Garth Ennis stuff, but I don't remember that being
okay. And that could have just been
yeah. And the Mike Carey stuff was definitely not that I read was definitely not as. Is Englishy because there's just a lot of it.
Fair enough. No problem. But I was very happy with it.
So it's coming out next week, Colin.
Okay, it's kind of weird. Just not a lot of number ones. There's a lot coming out, but not a lot of. So my highlight stuff is a little off. Batman's Grave number 2. That's continuing the Warren Ellis stuff. Black Cat Annual number 1. She marries Spider-Man. Woo! Black Stars Above. This is from Vault. Something like back in the wilderness. Like, you know, it sounded like 1800s type thing. And then all of a sudden there's a cosmic invasion. DC's doing the Superhero Girls Giant number 1. I'm excited for that because that's going to be one of those things, you know, parents are in looking for something for their kids. And here's a little $5 comic. With, you know, big thick for them. So I'm looking forward to that. Detective is getting its acetate cover. Dr. Mirage number 4. Doctor Who 13th Doctor Holiday Specials coming out. Dollhouse Family is the next one in the Joe Hill line. I think this is written by Mike Carey.
Yeah. But the thing that there's a backup story.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's like sea dogs.
Yeah.
It's like a sea werewolves thing. And the second part of that is in
this
book.
It's going to be going through all of the Hill books.
Yeah. And I wonder if they'll release that as a trade.
Probably.
Or
a 64 page.
Yeah.
Or is it the kind of thing where it's just like, we want you to buy these issues. So
no, because they want money in the trade. Yeah.
Dave, Edgar Allan Poe's Snifter of Terror, season 2, number 2.
Oh, I think there's a Mark Russell.
This is the Mark Russell. Okay, cool.
About Lucky the Leprechaun, I think.
Okay.
Man, that's going to be magically delicious.
ElfQuest has a new series coming out. Event Leviathan wraps up with number 6. Fallen Angels, there you go. So you can learn all about Psylocke. Family Tree, this is one, Jeff Lemire, where their kid is slowly turning into a tree, and they got to go through the back roads of America to try to find a cure for him before he turns fully into a tree.
Before he sets root.
You can leave. Far Sector number 1, this is the Young Animal Green Lantern one. Flash is getting its acetate cover. Folklords is a new one. Neat idea where, this is Matt Kent, where it's always kids on our Earth are having these dreams of this fantasy world. Well, this is on a fantasy world having dreams of people wearing suits and technology and things like that. And he goes to find the Folklords to see if they can make sense of his visions. Marvel Tales Doctor Strange is one of those reprint books. Morbius number 1, because we need another Morbius book. Psylords number 6, Punisher Soviet Pat.
Yeah,
Garth Ennis returning to Punisher. Star Wars, the penultimate issue of Star Wars before the new number 1 in December. Or in January 1st. Superman 17, big things happening. Dun, dun, dun. There. Thank you, Spencer. Yeah. I like that. That was a good visual clue. Sorry, folks, you can't see that. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl gets her last issue at number 50. It's sure to be followed by a number one shortly.
I'm gonna say, how many number ones did she have?
She had two in 1 year.
Isn't? Are they just gonna put her in the Scholastics and
they might
forget the?
Yeah, they might do that. Wonder Woman 82 gets her acetate, and X-Men 2 comes out. So
yeah,
lots of stuff going on next week. At the store, we're doing Turtles Volume 1 for book club, per Spencer. He picked that. It's all his fault. You picked the last two book club books.
I did.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're done.
Yeah, I'll stop.
You're done.
He likes Turtles.
I know he likes Turtles.
This Turtle series is good, though. I read that first trade, and it's definitely... Okay.
Did you get any complaints about
it? I recommend that.
No.
At least I'm not
so
picking
we've been
that
selling a lot of twos and threes. Yeah, I have more twos and threes coming.
And it seems like good timing, because the series is supposed to be coming back.
Okay. This month I did a little different. I wanted to do a creator because I've done just about every publisher and I've done all the big titles. And I was trying to figure out what creator I wanted to do. And I wanted somebody that had kind of a wide range of stuff. And I know I've probably done Ellis before and Morrison. Unintentionally. But so I wanted somebody that had kind of a broad range. And I decided on Gail Simone. Because she's written for just about everybody, and she's just a really cool person. So I said, okay, we're going to go. November is Gail Simone month. So Tim made a little display of some of her stuff. And
did you tweet at her?
No, not yet. I will. I meant to take a picture, and then I forgot to Saturday, and I didn't get them down Sunday or Monday.
What's your favorite Gail Simone book?
I really like Leaving Megalopolis. Honestly, I'm not sure. Yeah.
I like her run on Red Sonja.
Okay. I just sold that to somebody. He bought that, and he bought the Mark Russell number one. So I'm like, you can't go wrong with Gail Simone on, you know, so he asked about the Red, but I said the one I've read and would recommend. And luckily, it came out today, so that timed out very well.
Man, sounds like you're playing
so
it.
Somebody
no,
came
I didn't.
In and was just
didn't.
Like,
he's a regular, and he gets trades, and he's just like, I've been thinking about trying Red Sonja, so.
I think he'll be happy with both of those.
Yeah, so I will tweet again. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. It's probably Thursday. It's probably more low-key day on social media type of thing. So we got that. Oh, we got Local Comic Shop Day coming up on 22nd? No.
23rd.
Book Club's the 22nd, so Local Comic Shop Day is the 23rd. I will post about all the stuff involved in that. It's still kind of a mix. Some stuff where it's unique versions of things that we can order. Other things, it's like limited editions. So, like, we get one. Like, I'm getting one copy of the Legion of Superheroes. It's like, that doesn't help me. You know, like, yeah. I was talking with some friends online, and they're like, you know, how do you do this? I said, my problem is it's a 15-minute event. You know, oh, Bob bought the only copy. Okay, thanks for coming. You know, it's like, what you can't make it. It's hard to make it into something. And then, you know, 1 year I did a raffle for it. Well, it's like, okay, well, that's not that exciting. And I also, you know, I'm out the cost of the book. You know, it's...
Yeah.
So it's...
I do think the raffle is good, though. I do enjoy...
Yeah.
My trying my luck.
Right. So we'll see. I got to see. Most of it's coming in next week.
And it's not, you're not really out the book the way you do the raffles.
Right. No. You're right. You're right.
To get the
ticket, but it's just one of those, you know. Well, yes, but like some stores sell them for $50 or $100. So you're out that, you know. So
I would rather you do the raffle than sell $100.
Right. So that's all I mean. One thing that is coming that I will be beating everybody over the head with is there's a special edition of These Savage Shores with a foil cover that I ordered a bunch of. So that was a really good book. That will be a book club book, just to warn you. What else? And then Black Friday's the following week. And that's its own thing. So I think that's it. So, as always, if you want to get a hold of me, it's pittsburghcomics.com. Pittsburgh Comics is Facebook, and PGH Comics is Twitter and Instagram. We'll go, Brandon.
That's a podcast.
We will talk at you next week. See ya.